for choosing this particular piece, which I had heard of and even read pieces of, but I didn't know these three pieces were all the same poem. And I have never delved into it the way Susan invited me to offer this reflection. So thank you, Susan. It's been a great process. I want to start that reflection by offering you a frame through which we can hear those beautiful words that Rumi just offered us, that Deb just offered us from Rumi. And I got these words largely from a source that I get a lot of my inspiration, Krista Tippett's On Being, wherein she interviewed a Sufi Muslim scholar on the works of Rumi. So in the introduction to the series, to the podcast, Krista Tippett offers this gorgeous summary of Rumi's context and impact. She says, Rumi understood searching and restlessness as a kind of arrival. He saw every form of human love as a mirror of the divine. He was born in 1207 near the city of Balkh, which is now Afghanistan. When he was a child, his family fled Mongol invaders and settled in Konya in present-day Turkey. Rumi wrote in Persian, the literary and spiritual language of a civilization that stretched from the Mediterranean Sea to India. To most of the people who read him today, from Tajikistan to Iran, he is known as Mevlana or Maulana, our master. She says Rumi left behind a vast body of lyric poetry, metaphysical writings, lectures, and letters, which have influenced Persian, Urdu, and Turkish literature across the centuries. He also inspired the whirling dervishes, ascetics, who based their practices on Rumi, including that dancing meditation that was part of his spiritual life. So I took this from an interview with Fatima Keshavars, a professor of Persian and comparative literature at Washington University in St. Louis. Ms. Keshavars says, quote, one of the reasons why he addresses the issues that are of concern to us so much today is because he belongs to a tradition, the Sufi tradition or the mystical tradition within Islam, which has always been concerned with the way human beings view themselves and each other and are able to relate to each other. It was part of Rumi's practice to spin around columns while reciting his poems, which is what inspired the Mevlevi order of Sufism, those whirling dervishes who spin in meditation to seek to remember Allah. Sufism is the Islamic mystical tradition that emerged as a spiritual renewal movement after the death of the Prophet Muhammad. It's such an embodied way to touch the holy. Krista Tippett said that Rumi imprinted that movement with a vividly sensual and poetic spirituality that has been controversial across the ages. He crafted some of his most religious ideas in the form of erotically toned love poetry, which seems at once addressed to Allah or God and to an earthly beloved. So I wrote in my description for this service that Rumi believed music, poetry, and dance were paths for reaching God. But I've learned since I wrote that, that it went way deeper than that. Ms. Keshavars says that Rumi's poetry is an invitation. You can't just read it and stay on the outside of it. She says, quote, the whirling is exactly a reflection of that. So he kind of comes into the tradition with all the intellectual legacy, but he says that's not enough. You have to do something else with it. Face it, play it, dance it, bring it into your everyday life. So in my words, Rumi invites us to hear not just words. He calls us to see and to feel, to know the depth and the breadth of the love we share with each other and with the divine. This is what his poetry is about, our relationship with the divine and through it, our relationship with our human siblings. By entering into his words and interacting with them, we are meant to interact with the divine. So, when we wake up empty and frightened, as we do every day, he says, don't try to fix it. Don't distract yourself. Don't get into your head. Don't yield to the temptation to chase it away or make it better before you've let yourself sit with it. Instead, create a thing of beauty, because creating a thing of beauty makes a relationship that will help you remember your relationship with the divine. There are hundreds of ways to kneel and kiss the ground, he says. When I hear these words, I remember a Muslim person that I saw in the airport chapel once, rolling out their prayer rug, saying some words, and then bowing, and then kneeling, and then touching their forehead to the rug in front of them. I think about how Muslims take the time to pray like this at 5 prescribed times a day. And I think about how deeply that praying involves the body. Rumi doesn't say there are hundreds of ways to pray, although my guess is that's what he means. He says that there are hundreds of ways we can invite our bodies to remember our relationship with the divine. For me, that means turning on some music and dancing in my kitchen when I feel low, rather than kneeling and kissing a rug. Or it means waking up early enough to see the sunrise and taking a picture to post on Facebook. Or coloring in one of my many coloring books. It means interacting with the beauty of the world and creating something within myself as a response. Interacting with the beauty of the world and creating something within myself as a response. Letting that beauty touch me, sometimes even heal me, but always offering me a way into remembering my relationship with spirit. That's enough for me. But Rumi continues with another call. Out beyond ideas of wrongdoing and rightdoing, he says, there's a field. I'll meet you there. Get past your perceptions and your judgments of yourself and of others, I hear, and meet others where they are. When the soul lies down in that grass, he said, the world is too full to talk about. When you can get to that place of non-judgment, I hear, you're more open to the beauty that's inherent in other humans, other beings, and your surroundings. And it's not just your mind that opens, it's your whole being. Imagine your heart, your soul, your spirit, whatever language you use, being so open, so ready to receive the love and the trust that you are offering into that space, right? Because you can't open your heart and soul and spirit without some trust. Imagine being so open that it can fill with the beauty and grace that is the world. Ideas, language, even the phrase each other, he says, doesn't make any sense. Again, I hear him getting us out of our heads, away from the distractions our brains create, so we can more fully experience our relationships with each other and the divine and the beauty, right? So much so that we become one with each other and the divine. Even the phrase each other doesn't make any sense. There are hundreds of ways to embody relationship, and letting go of the need to distract ourselves and judge others are necessary practices in getting there. And once we've learned to find this state, Rumi urges us to stay. Don't go back to sleep. Stay. Be awake. Be aware. Stay in a state in which you can listen to the secrets of the breezes at dawn. Stay in a frame of heart and spirit in which you can know what you need to stay in the cycle of receiving and offering. Stay aware so you can take in more beauty, more grace, and you can offer more beauty and more grace. If you know what you need to stay, you can ask it of your human siblings and of the energy that flows between us and the divine. Stay. Keep practicing the art of not getting distracted by your own brain when things are hard, so you can sit with those things. So you can sit with those things and let your heart and spirit stay open to knowing what you need to stay. It is like a door. If you do the work of keeping the door open, beautiful things will come through. There are hundreds of ways you can do that. Stay. Sounds so lovely, doesn't it? And so easy. I am making this sound so easy. It's not. It's not. Staying open to what is around us is a risk, is it not? When there is so much around us that is ugly or broken, when there is so much evidence of abuse and neglect in relationships, when there is so much pain, staying open to what is around us is a risk. I think the practice is to acknowledge that, to know that yes, the ugliness is there, the hurt is there, the pain is there, the fear is there, it is all there on the other side of that door, that beautiful round door. And there is also beauty. There is also kindness. There is also generosity. There is also realistic acceptance of what the world is and what the world needs. The practice isn't ignoring the ugliness. It is once again a both and. It is acknowledging the ugliness. It is seeing the ugliness, sitting with the ugliness, letting ourselves feel the weight of that ugliness on our hearts. It is making space for it. It is what my friend Pam once told me, making friends with it. Practicing making space and feeling the hard, harsh, ugly things widens my capacity to feel anything at all. And when that capacity widens, I can also feel more beauty when I see it. So we practice making the space, and then we practice noticing the beauty, and then we practice making the beauty. It's a great metaphor. I have known this. At least up until the making the beauty part, right? I have known this. I've gone through things, right, that I've had to sit with and learn to live with and come out on the other side of that with that bigger capacity to feel and notice. And when I choose to feel and notice the beauty, it takes up a much larger space inside of me because that space has been opened and hollowed out. Rumi added making beauty to my toolkit. So I don't just get to go out and notice it. I get to make it. I color as meditation. The closest thing to meditation that I come, I use these coloring books and I make these colors. This was a darker day. But making the colors of the darker day gave me the space to also make these colors. And I get to look, and this is all metaphor, but it's also very real, right? I get to look at this. It's done. I made this. I get to look at it and smile and remember that there is beauty. And because it's mine, right? I co-created this thing. It's mine. The message for me centers on the line, let the beauty we love be what we do. Let the beauty guide us into relationship with each other and that which is larger than us. Let the beauty guide us through the maze and tunnels of the ugliness. Hold on to the beauty, because it engages our hearts and our souls when we create it, and then we make it ours. And that is an action that can sustain us. That is an action that is a prayer and a practice. May it be so, and may we be so.